We are back after an incredibly, incredibly long offseason. I'm Tristan Ryans. That is Kevin Walker. This is season two of the Lap Podcast, episode one. The long wait is over. We've got plenty to talk about. F-175's reveal event. We got a chance to see all the liveries. We're going to be discussing them as if we are expert graphic designers, and we are not. But the also very controversial rule change instilled by the FIA, we're going to be covering that. We're going to be hitting bold predictions for this upcoming championship season. Right now, it's testing in Bahrain. Finally, we're able to watch cars go around the track. Welcome back to the Lap Podcast, powered by StreamYard. It's so good to be back. Let's hop into it. F-175, Kevin, what are your thoughts on the event as a whole?
Well, before we get into F-175, it's just awesome to be able to do this. We worked really hard on putting all of this together. Shout out to StreamYard, our partnership that they don't know anything about. We hope
we're powered by StreamYard. We are not sponsored by StreamYard. Let's just put that out there.
We hope y'all enjoy it. We hope y'all like it. If you, whatever you love, whatever you don't like, you know, make sure to leave comments. Let us know. This is what we're planning on using going forward. We also will be doing stuff in person as well. But for this week's episode, we're doing it through our computers, and we're trying to bring on new content, new stuff. You'll see that as we go through this episode. But yes, leave us reviews. Let us know what you think. You don't know this, but we somehow got better looking than last year. Last year we were uglier. This year we look better.
We really sacrificed, you know, to bring you all this viewing experience. And if you want to engage with us more, by the way, right down there at the bottom of the screen are all of our social medias. So feel free to hit us up, follow us, like, subscribe, all that good stuff. It's a pleasure to finally see you. And for our listening audience, it's a pleasure to be back the exact same way that you were listening to us before. We just appreciate all the support that you've been giving us. But with all that chitter chatter, with all that thank yous out of the way, we got to hit this. F-175, Kevin Walker, your thoughts on the event as a whole?
So the event for us took place at about 2:00 Central Time here in DFW and in Texas. Obviously, the event took place at the London in O2 Arena. I think that's what
the O2.
O2. Other than Alpine's DJ performing for the entirety of the 2 hours, I thought it was a good event, not great event. I didn't get to watch it in its entirety. But other than, like I said, Alpine's DJ played for an hour and a half. A lot of people were upset about that. And I know this is something that me and Tristan talked about off air. But we didn't need 4 artists, I don't feel like. Especially 4 artists that really don't have anything to do with F1. I felt like you could have kind of stayed away from that. But I understand bringing in music and everything like that. I think the reveal of the cars was good. I think from a ground basis, F-175 provided us with what we wanted. I just don't know if there's enough support for them to do it next year, the year. Like, I don't know if this will become an annual thing after this.
I had a lot of fun with it. I think it was a little bit ridiculous at times. I think you and I basically agree on that. It was very over the top, but for the potential first time doing something like this, I don't think it was actually that bad. I think good, not great is a very fair statement. Still a really fun way to introduce the season. Like, I wouldn't hate it if this came back next year. The music was a little here nor there. Like, I can't say I'm a huge Machine Gun Kelly fan or a Kane Brown fan. Or whoever that DJ was for Alpine that you just mentioned. Look, there were a couple of issues I had. That was absolutely one of them. The DJ thing, just way too long. And I think there was a little bit of a miscommunication or maybe an overestimation by the production side, because the Sauber car reveal was like 5 minutes of Drumline, the movie. It was a lot. It was a huge, big display. And then I think after they really put it into practice from a production standpoint, they realized we got to cut down on these things by like 3 minutes a piece, because these reveals are drastic and massive and way too long. So Sauber's right. was way too long. It kind of set the tone a little bit early. But after that, a lot of the other productions were okay. They felt engaging enough. They felt warranted as far as like time is considered. Again, until we got to the Alpine part. The FIA got an absolutely massive booing from the crowd, which I actually wanted to display here. This posted on Reddit 5 days ago. Just listen here.
Officials and incredible volunteers who help make our racetracks around the world safe. The FIA has been instrumental in their efforts over the last 75 years.
It was a huge booing. The entire arena like was loud.
Yeah, look, that's what you're gonna get if you as the FIA, that's what you're gonna get when you make decisions that your fan base and even some of your drivers, which I know they can't come directly out and say, "Hey, not a fan of this," but that has been kind of the whole topic of discussion over the break, and even towards the tail end of last year, of all the issues that we as fans and them as drivers have had with the FIA and, you know, team principals and teams in general have had.
Yeah. The booing was definitely loud. Look, the FIA, they do their part. I mean, you know, as far as like safety is concerned, you know, they have brought things quite a far way, regulations, a lot of them are proper, but the swearing ban, we're absolutely going to be talking about, here in a few moments, really. But that boom was
I wonder if Nico Harrison is part of the FIA, just a little Dallas reference.
Well, the only thing that you've been going through it as a resident Mavs fan. Look, I think the booing, you know what it reminds me of? It's like every time we're an NFL fans, and I'm sure a good chunk of this audience here are also NFL fans. It's like when Roger Goodell comes out during the NFL draft, he just welcomes it at this point. I think they're kind of, I would say it very much so reminded me of like the Roger Goodell boos that you've seen throughout the years. The FIA, it's just one decision, really. I know there's not a lot of fanfare when it comes to, you know, FIA's president, Mohammed Ben Sulayem, when it comes to this like newest guideline, this newest rule, this newest ban. The hate is a little bit warranted. I can understand exactly why fans feel this way. As a fan myself, I mean, Gordon Ramsay actually brought up a really good point when it came to the swearing ban that I wanted to highlight as well. Let's see, pull this up here. And I've almost got it. My apologies. Here we go.
How important do you think it is as role models not to turn the airwaves blue with coarse language? Be very careful how you answer this because you're on the headmaster's table.
Come on, chat. You're going to get me into trouble. Listen, I think it's a industry language, the fact that these athletes are pushed themselves to the extreme. So sometimes if it comes out, let them be real. Let it go. Come on. They're in their life every time. They're traveling over 200 miles an hour. So if the shit...
Please! Right. You're not getting asked back next year.
Go.
That's which... Gordon Ramsay for you.
I mean, Gordon Ramsay absolutely highlighting the reality of the situation. Guys driving over 200 miles per hour at the peaks of the motorsporting world. And coming down on these guys with fines, with suspensions, which I'm actually going to detail for you guys here, they're a bit egregious. And I think mostly it's the aggressiveness of these penalties that have really set the F1 world, the motorsporting world, into its izzy. Cause they're a lot in my opinion. Let's see. I've got it pulled up. There we go. And here, so this is from the FIA's website. These are the new guidelines highlighted here. The first offense, £10,000, if I'm not mistaken, or 10,000 euros. The currency in which the FIA operates, I believe it's euros. So a first offense at the Formula One level, which is the pinnacle of motorsport, all of these things are multiplied based on the level. So as I've scrolled down a little bit here, level 4, the FIA World Championship, a multiple of 4. So anything you see here, multiply it by 4. A first offense is a 40,000 euro fine just for saying a cuss word at all during any kind of press event, during a motorsporting event, what have you. That's already pretty aggressive as it is. And I remember us last year talking about the potential of any kind of misconduct being enforced by the FIA, what the penalty should look like. And I think you and I both agreed, at most, it should be some kind of like a financial fine. Maybe they use that money to donate it. Whatever the FIA decides to do felt to be, in my opinion, the most appropriate stance, right? Second offense, though.
We talk about it from an NFL standpoint. You look at the NFL, they're used to fining guys all the time, every weekend, every day for doing something, whether if it's in an interview, whether if it's on the field, off the field, this, that, or the other, justified or unjustified from a fan's perspective. And it's more than likely, unless legality is taken into account, it's always going to be a monetary foul or fine. Mm-hmm. And for the first offense from the FIA, and this, keep in mind, new swearing rule, this isn't something that's already been implemented. This is all brand new. And hey, one slip up, you know, £40,000 and a 1 month
second offense. Yeah, which is where I was going to go.
Yeah, the second offense, and it's just, it feels like it's like, hey, you know, there isn't even really like a warning or anything. It's like, you know, you're not swearing. And then if you do swear, it's all the way up here. And then it just kind of climbs from there. And it's kind of insane, that jump that it takes.
Mm-hmm. And it's the 1 month suspension part that's really egregious. Like, again, monetary wise, I don't agree with the number. These guys make a lot of money, like, good for them. But I don't even necessarily agree with the number. But as NFL fans, we've both seen a little bit of hefty fines for all sorts of different things. But it's not irregular to us as sports fans, right? A monetary fine is a monetary fine. The NFL is going to do whatever they want to use that money. However, if you imagine from an NFL perspective, if, you know, you're Lamar Jackson and you get hit late and you get caught on a hot mic saying, like, I can't believe this effing happened or something. And then Lamar Jackson gets fined or suspended for a month.
That's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. So
the NFL
there's
wouldn't let that happen, right?
The NFL obviously wouldn't let that happen. I don't think the NFL would let that happen.
Why should F1 let that happen whenever it's going to be more than likely? Look, you've got 20 drivers, and each driver, and you could argue that out of 20, there's 10 of those drivers that are extremely popular and extremely well known in the F1 community. Because more than likely, for every 20 drivers, with every 10 teams, every team's going to have a leading guy, right? And so you could argue there's at least 10 drivers that are going to be very popular, very well known. And so you're going to have key figures. You're going to have the Maxes. Lando doesn't really curse that much, but Charles has been big on cursing. You're going to have these guys. They're going to slip up. And you're really going to tell me that you're going to hold out an F1 star out for a month and you want to draw up viewership? How the hell is that supposed to happen?
No, it's incredibly misguided, and it's just so heavy-handed. And then a third offense, if you get that far, which, I mean, if you've been watching Formula One at any level for the last few years, I mean, it happens semi-regularly.
First, second, and third offense could all be meet in the same radio call.
Dude, the first weekend, it could be somebody goes off turn 9 or something of that nature, feels forced off, and you know, they just let them fly. But that's where the censorship from a media perspective also kind of kicks in, you know, bleeping out the words. I think that the FIA, you know, the motorsporting trying to police language when, as from a media perspective, we can censor things. Even in that Gordon Ramsay clip, you know what he's trying to say there, but it was still censored, right? It was still cut off. And that's where the media element comes in. If you're the media element of this, is it kind of on the F1 TV? Is it kind of on the broadcasters not really tattletale on the drivers and not show these heat of the moment clips just because somebody dropped an F-bomb or an S-bomb or whatever? Trying to censor that is a little bit more so on the media onus side of it versus, I think, the drivers in the heat of the moment reacting with just a human reaction at that point. And the third offense part of this, the potential deduction highlighted here, third offense, 1 month suspension plus the deduction of championship points. You want to tell me that an FIA, a Formula One World Championship, coming down to the line all the way in Abu Dhabi could very well be decided if somebody says the F word by accident while getting shoved off in the Hungaro ring like months prior.
Well, I mean, could you imagine
if like Max Verstappen would have lost the title last year because he cussed a couple times during a few races and Lando Norris was able to catch him? You know what I mean? How would you feel as a fan?
I'd feel great.
Personally. I mean, I knew you would feel great, but no, what but I'm getting, get, but it's like, but no, but like on honor, you wouldn't like it that
way. No, I get what you're saying. And it makes like, it sucks. Nobody wants to win like that. Nobody wants to win because of a fine or anything like that. And additionally, it's just, it's so frustrating because we obviously run this podcast and, you know, we tell all of our friends, all of our peers, like, hey, if you're not into F1, here's all the reason to get into F1. Like, here's why it's great.
We're not leaning into the swearing portion of it, but the intensity of the sport is a huge
draw. No, right. Exactly. But it's kind of like, you know, it makes it hard for us. And, you know, I'm sure our viewers and our listeners feel the exact same way, like trying to like, hey, you know, watch F1, watch Drive to Survive. Like, here's why you should watch it. Here's, you know, the drama. Like, the drama is the main thing. Like, that's what drives it home, right? Well, how the hell are we supposed to have drama if it's like, you know, they're literally on the radio call saying bleep or something because they can't curse? Like, how are you supposed to add to the drama when it's like, well, you know, this is, you know, it's intense. It's the pinnacle of motorsport. But if you curse, they may or may not take away some points. And it's like, well, then.
Yeah.
Imagine you're driving
200 miles per hour down the highway. You know what I mean? Like, not even driving 200 miles an hour.
I can do 40 miles an hour on 35 going to work, and I've got more curse words cooped up. And talk about 200 miles.
I mean, you and I are resident Dallas Fort Worth, you know, citizens. I mean, driving to and from on these highways, just in your day-to-day life, you'll probably let one fly because somebody is being, you know, they're driving a little bit too fast, very irresponsibly, recklessly on the highways, and very well could be sending people to the hospital. But even in those moments, you're frustrated. That guy is driving like an effing maniac driving down the road. But imagine you're driving 200 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And you're heading towards the apex of a turn. Somebody next to you misjudges the breaking point. You both get sent out of the race, and you're supposed to react with, oh, tiddlywinks, that was so unfortunate. I can't believe that Lando Norris misjudged his breaking zone. And oh, gosh darn it, now I'm out of the Grand Prix. There's my season, and I have forfeited a championship. That's how they want them to respond to these. Oh, tally-ho.
Or on the other side, you know, you've drove 50 laps, and the engine goes out, and you got 2 laps to go, and you're in first place ready to secure a win. Oh, dang it. I guess I'll get him next time.
Yeah. Like, shucks. Yuki Tsunoda tapped me with his front wing. I've lost my rear tires, and now I'm off the podium. I've lost the Grand Prix. Oh, shucks. Oh, darn it. That's what they want these guys to react. I don't think it's practical. I don't think it's based in reality.
It makes me so mad, dude.
It takes the emotion out of the sport. We want the raw human emotion of these athletes at all times, but the FIA is effectively saying, but not unless we like it. I think it's just a bit of it's egregious. It's too much. There's no swearing rule. Look, I'm not saying at the end of the day, if it's the idea of like, we got to protect kids, we got to protect the younger audience of this sport.
It already gets censored over the TV.
You can't be somebody's parent for them. You know what I mean? And again, it's already being censored on the TV. At the end of the day, let the parents parent here, right? So not to get overly political, but yeah, it's egregious. It's dumb. It's too much. And another example of this actually was utilized. The fine was actually doled out in the World Rally Championship. I want to say the driver, Adrian Forma or whatever. Excuse me. He got hit with a fine, a $10,000 imposed on the driver, Adrian Forma. Additional fine of $20,000 imposed on the driver. He said, and I quote, "We effed up yesterday on rally.tv," and then proceeded to say, "Apologies for the language there." So even making the mistake and acknowledging the mistake still landed him and his team a 30,000 euro fine. What do you want these guys to do? heat of the moment. I'm imagining you've probably seen this with, I think it was a World Endurance Championship race where the driver stuck his arm out the window because he was cut off or something of that nature and flipped off his opponent.
Yeah.
Have you seen this? Yeah.
I mean, you got drivers flip each other off all the time.
Oh yeah. So, but that's not swearing. How are you going to, you know what I mean? Like, is that going to be the next rule?
That's
like
what I'm saying,
no
man.
Signal,
gonna,
no sign.
If they've got a problem with this, they're going to find technicalities and they're going to dull the sport. And then it's going to be like all the reasons why we love it are going to be the reasons. They're going to turn that into the reasons why we hate it. And that's frustrating. That's very, very frustrating. This, I really wish they would overturn this. And I'm afraid, and this is all to wrap it up, I'm afraid that this is going to be a decision that leads to more bad decisions. I don't want it to be that way.
I mean, we talk about the incentive for certain guys. We've heard this conversation had a few times about, especially within the F1 community, of Max Verstappen, his want to drive within this championship at this level of motorsport. You know, he's one of the biggest names in this sport, for better or worse, right? You're going to start pushing guys like that out who are fierce competitors because of a swearing ban? He already kind of feels targeted about certain rules, left or right or otherwise, but you're taking one more incentive. I'm not to say that like getting to this level, you can cuss and swear all the time, but like you're taking a little bit of the edge away from the sport. And for a guy like a Max Verstappen or like a Michael Schumacher back in the day, or Fernando Alonso still driving at this level. I mean, Lewis Hamilton's even had his moments too of being incredibly frustrated and letting him go on the radio. Some guys are a little bit more composed than others, but at the end of the day, you're taking away a bit of the edge from the sport overall at this level. We both agree. I'm sure all of the TLPs out there also agree that this is just harmful for the sport. But we got to talk about these teams that are currently driving around the Bahrain circuit. I want to go in reverse Constructors Championship order from the results of last season. We want to talk about starting with Sauber, talking about this team. What are the expectations going into this season for each team? Once again, we're going to start with the Kick Sauber Steak F1 Formula One.
Man, I love these uniforms. These uniforms look fantastic.
Yeah, F1 hasn't quite caught up with the with all of the team photos quite yet. But this is your driver line: Nico Hülkenberg, Gabriel Bortoleto. A little bit of information about both these guys. Of course, Nico Hülkenberg is a incredibly savvy vet coming over from the Haas team from last year. Had a very strong season. A couple of P6 finishes with that like midfield level team. So Nico Hülkenberg, incredibly savvy veteran driver. He's been around the block alongside one of these incredibly exciting rookies in Gabriel Bortoleto, the reigning Formula 2 champion, won the F3 championship the year before. The kid's special. He's incredibly quick. But what are we expecting, Kevin Walker, for this Steak Kick Sauber F1 team this season?
Not a lot. not a lot. It's not the best situation for Bortoleto. Nico Hülkenberg already kind of knows what's up. Just don't crash the car. If you're Bortoleto, you're just like, look, this is a stop on my way to getting to a top five competitive team. I think that's the thing that just kind of makes sure, like, hey, you're not putting the car on the wall. You're not costing the team more than it needs to be. I think that you can have a little bit of excitement for Mattia Binotto being your team principal, but I wouldn't expect anything too crazy in the Sauber. I want to say they had under double digit points last year.
That sounds right.
I would expect pretty much the same this year as well, but I will be kind of watching Bortoleto just a little bit to see what he can get out of that that Sauber car.
I mean, expectations-wise for me, I think they're probably going to stay in last place. Unfortunately for Nico and unfortunately for Gabriel Bortoleto, this is just not a team that's focused on 2025. This is a team that's looking forward to Audi coming in, starting in 2026, and dealing with the changeover from the Sauber team into the Audi era. You've already mentioned Mattia Binotto, the team chief. They got technical chief James Key behind this as well. It looks like they're going to stick with Ferrari this season, but starting next year, they've got an inc- an entirely new power unit as well. This is a team that's got its sights set on 2026. This is
they had 4 points last year. I just checked. They had 4 points last year.
I think they got them in that? Between two races over the last chunk of the season, excuse me.
I think they can beat that. Not to cut you off, sorry. But I think they can beat that just because I believe in Bortoleto. I think he can kind of do some stuff and shake it up. And like I said, like you said, Hülkenberg's a savvy vet. He kind of knows what this is all about. You can probably get a point or two out of him. I could say they might beat it. Probably maybe 5.
I would hope that they at least do better than. I would hope they do at least better than 4 points that they had last year. But I'm not expecting them to really make any waves, break any headlines. This is going to be a team that they are on the grid. They are part of every weekend. But we are, as fans and as media, really just looking forward to seeing what 2026 looks like for the Kicks Albert team. Moving on to Williams, who finished in 9th place last year. They made some changes. Atlassian Williams Racing Team, their new title sponsor, leaving only one team, your team, without a title sponsor. Yep. Obviously, the big wave here is Carlos Sainz, coming over from Ferrari, number 55, former race winner, alongside Alex Albon, who's a very savvy, strong veteran driver as well. Expectations-wise, I think this is a team that could surprise us this year. I actually am imagining them not finishing in 9th place. They've got a really strong lineup. They've got really good leadership with James Vowles. I like the direction they're going in. However, I'm not expecting them to make any jumps up to like 5th place. I think they're probably going to cap out around 6th at best, mostly because this is a team that for years has said, we are looking ahead to the next regulations. We are looking ahead to 2026. This is not a team that is trying to fight for championships by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't expect them to be at the bottom of the barrel. I expect them to still be quite a bit ahead of the Sauber team.
So I just went and looked. Combined last year, Williams had 5 points. I would expect obviously more than that. There isn't any reason why Williams. I'm sorry. I know it's Atlassian.
We'll call him Williams. It's Williams.
Sorry.
They got a cool title sponsor, but we all know what we're talking about here.
James Vowles has done a really good job, you know, gearing that team up. They look better and better year in, year out. Last year, it was the driver changes that was happening on top of the crashes that was occurring. Mm-hmm. Those were the main issues for Williams last year. It felt like literally every week it was bad. It was really, really bad for them. I would expect a much cleaner year this year. Carlos Sainz, you would talk about a savvy vet. Carlos Sainz has been around, but he's only had experience with really good teams, and he can get points. He had 290 points. Now, granted, that was in a Ferrari engine. I understand that. But I think Carlos Sainz is going to be able to help Alex Albon kind of flourish into the driver we think Albon can be. And that's a really good driver because we already think Alex Albon is a pretty good driver. I would say he could be in the discussion for top 10. Maybe he's at that 10 point. We could do that another day. But I think that this team is going to exceed expectations from last year. I would not be surprised if Williams is – I'll put it to you this way. I'd be more surprised if Williams is outside of the top 5 than I would be if they were.
Okay. I mean, overall, I think 2025 is kind of their soft launch to 2026. 2026 is going to be the moneymaker. It's going to be the definer, really, for all of the investment that James Vowles and all of their sponsors and all of their backers have really put into this team. Aiming for 2026, getting off to a really, really good start. 2025 is kind of the soft launch. This is the driver lineup as it moves forward. This is what we've got moving forward. Between Alex Albon, between Carlos Sainz, you've got race winners here. You've got a lot of experience here. You've got savvy drivers that are not going to put it in the wall every single weekend. Human error is human error. Don't get me wrong. Both these guys crashed at like Interlagos last year, but so did like 4 other drivers that weekend in the pouring, pouring, pouring rain. Overall, I think this is a team that's going to exceed 2024. Maybe they're not they're not fighting anything. They're not fighting for wins, but I could see them in that mix within that, you know, P6 down to maybe like P8, that title fight. And for a team like Williams, again, one of the smaller teams on this grid, every championship point matters. Every place that you can gain matters, especially for these smaller teams down the grid. And Williams, who have had a lot of struggles when it comes to just infrastructure over the years, as much as they can possibly put into this team, I think this is going to be a really big year for them. But again, let's keep the expectations a little bit more muted. But let's now move on to the Visa Cash App Racing Bulls. Eighth place last year between Yuki Tsunoda and then Liam Lawson, as well as Daniel Ricciardo. And what are
we just call
this?
Them the RB? Can we can still call them the RB, right? We can
just I've called them V Carb, whatever. I think that as a community, we all understand who we're talking about here, the Racing Bulls team, but I'm going to shorthand, I'm going to call them V Carb.
All right, V Carb it is. All right, good. Yeah. We decided on that episode one. Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have any expectations for V Carb, to be honest with you. They're going to get points some weekends, and then some weekends they might both put it into the wall. V Carb is kind of all over the place. There's obvious reasons why Red Bull did not choose Yuki Tsunoda, though we are Yuki Tsunoda advocates here on the Left podcast.
Yeah.
We don't know what we're going to get from Yuki Tsunoda now that he's the lead guy with Isaac Hadjar in the seat next to him. So I have no expectations for V Carb. I wouldn't say they're high. I would definitely say I have higher expectations for Williams versus V Carb personally, but we'll see what happens. This team is young on it. I would like to say they're inexperienced, but Yuki Tsunoda's kind of wore that title out. He's definitely an experienced driver at this point. We'll see what they can do.
Yeah, I mean, expectations-wise, I actually see them taking a bit of a leap forward, not just because the livery is cool, but I don't see...
Well, it definitely helps.
Well, I don't see them taking... I feel like overall I've said Williams now, V-Carb, are we both going to take steps forward, but I just don't see them... I can see P8 one more time as like their floor. I don't see them going any lower than they currently are. This is a solid team. Obviously, it's the development team for Red Bull proper, but Yuki Tsunoda this year... I think he actually has a lot to prove. Now, you could argue he's had a lot to prove every single season. Everybody's got something to prove. But for him, I think a lot of people have looked at his situation and gone, well, he got passed over again when it came to the Red Bull opportunity. So what is there really left for him? There's still a lot left for Yuki Tsunoda in my eyes, because he's got to prove himself to continue to be a member of this grid moving forward. Aston Martin are picking up the Honda engine moving forward in 2026. Red Bull are moving on to Ford. His contract ends at the end of this season. So for him to still have a place on this grid, trying to prove himself as somebody who maybe even this year, should the Liam Lawson experiment really not go the way that Red Bull are hoping, this might not be Yuki Tsunoda's last stop. And personally speaking, I think he has a lot to prove, not just to Red Bull, potentially to Aston Martin. Obviously, you've got the stake there when it comes to the Stroll family, Lawrence Stroll and his son Lance, who is driving for that team. I don't think that they're necessarily move off of Lance unless they feel like they have the perfect situation, right? The perfect storm kind of has to happen there. But before we even get there, Yuki Tsunoda could very well be making that jump from team to team next year, whether it's a reserve role or otherwise. I just see Yuki Tsunoda as too good of a driver to be left off of someone's team. I know that Red Bull have the feeling they have with him when it comes to the Honda partnership. He's a Honda driver, but maybe that's worked for and against him in his career, especially when it comes to the eyes of Christian Horner and company. That seems to be a big part of why they won't promote him. But I think he has a lot to prove. When it comes to Isaac Hadjar, he's coming into a very tough, cutthroat Red Bull upper crust here. He's got a lot to prove. F2's runner up last year behind Gabriel Bortoleto, an unlucky end to that season. He had the opportunity to go fight for that title and then stalling out in Abu Dhabi, kind of out of his control at that point. This is a pretty regular occurrence on the F2 grid. If you don't watch a lot of F2, cars stall out constantly, and you got a little bit unlucky. And I think overall his sentiment this year is just going to be close to Yuki. If you're close to Yuki and you're consistent, you're not crashing the car, you're not giving them reasons to cut you, you're going to stick around in this sport for a while. This might very well be your home for the next couple of seasons, but look at it as an opportunity. If Liam Lawson's experiment doesn't work out, let's say towards the end of this season, going into next year. Like,
that Red Bull seat is to be reevaluated. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. So anybody who's sitting in that V carb right now, it's, you know, it's the class right before, you know, graduation. That's basically it. You're on the F1 grid. That's a huge, huge, huge career accomplishment, but this is not the end of the story. It's going to be very aggressive. I see a lot of tension coming out of this part of the paddock, but
I could see them getting into a lot of fights.
Very feisty. And you're either going to love him, Isaac Hadjar, or maybe you're not going to love him. Maybe you might hate him, but Isaac Hadjar is quick. He deserves to be on this grid, but they are my betting favorite to become the first swearing penalty of the season. So just keep that in mind.
Oh, okay.
They're my betting favorite. 100%. 100% my betting favorite.
I like it.
We got to move up the grid again. Seventh place in last year's Constructors, the Haas Formula One team. Another completely changed driver lineup with Esteban Ocon, Ollie Bearman. There's a lot of potential here, but I want to hear your thoughts.
I really like this lineup. I really, really do. I think this is a really good opportunity for Haas to kind of make their mark, I would say. Esteban Ocon is a very talented driver, one, but he's a very well-poised driver also. Ollie Bearman, he's still a rookie, yes? Is this considered rookie or no?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yes, he's still a rookie. This is his rookie season, officially.
We've seen him in spurts here and there for Ferrari. And he's performed very well every time he's gone out there, you know, hasn't done too much. Ollie Bearman, we've seen bits and pieces of what he can do. But I'm more excited for what Ollie Bearman can do with a full season under his belt, with a full off season of knowing he's going to be an F1 driver. He's going to be for Haas. And, you know, him and Ocon's relationship and how that's going to work. I think this could be a really big year for Haas. I'm not saying anything like top three worthy or anything. Mm-hmm. But I think Haas is going to be in the conversation where we're sitting down, we're watching quali or we're watching practice sessions. And we might see Haas top the charts a couple of times. It's like, hey, they've got a decent car and, you know, their drivers are doing a really good job. I think they could definitely win the midfield this year.
Yeah, I like Haas a lot. I think that they have a really good opportunity to jump from P7 to P6. Last year, getting overtaken by Alpine was huge, huge, huge. But seventh place for Haas, the smallest team, by the way, on this grid. They're incredibly effective. America's team for now. Remember, we got Cadillac creeping on up. But expectations-wise, they surprised a lot of people last year. First year for team principal Ayo Komatsu, and the development track that they had last year allowed them to be very competitive for long periods of time. I really like them going into this season. Again, P6 feels like a very reasonable achievement for a team that landed in P7 but had strong control of that P6 before Brazil's insanity last year. So Esteban Ocon, very serviceable driver. He's got a race win to his name, winning at Hungary years and years ago. Similar pedigree, in my opinion, to like a Kevin Magnussen or Nico Hülkenberg, maybe at his ceiling last year. So he's got plenty of talent. He's got a lot of experience. He's going to bring in some sponsors with him as well. And then Ollie Bearman, though, you've talked a lot about him already. He had a couple of races last year, one with Ferrari, getting P7 at a very challenging, very high-speed circuit in Jeddah, and then also filled in last year for Kevin Magnussen when he had to miss a race because he had that penalty. He also landed in the points, and if I'm not mistaken, he outperformed Nico Hülkenberg. So Ollie is very exciting. Watching F2 last year, it was a bit of a struggle last year for Ollie at times. I think maybe the back-and-forth thing was a bit much, but overall, he still won races in both years that he's spent in F2. He's performed very, very, very well in F1. You can see the talent there. And I'm very, very intrigued to see how close he and Ocon are this year. Maybe you could call it a bold prediction or otherwise, but I would not be shocked if at year's end, Ollie Bearman is well clear away from Esteban Ocon when it comes to the actual point spread. Nicole, you can book that one right now.
All right, I like it.
Yeah, moving up the grid to P6, Alpine, Pierre Gasly, Jack Doohan. I want to start off with the expectations here.
Is it Doohan or is it Doohan?
I've heard it both, but I'm pretty sure it's Doohan. I could be wrong on that. If I'm wrong, TLP, let me know in the comments. Let's get phonetic here. But
I'm doing Doohan.
Okay. I think Alpine take a step back, a massive step back, in fact. I think this team is going to go from P6. I could very well see them dropping down to P9. This is a team that's had a lot of drama throughout this offseason, towards the end of last season, the way that the Esteban Ocon saga ended, the promotion for Jack Doohan in that final race of the season, the expectations for Jack Doohan. And this is also, mind you, remember, this is the last year that they're going to be under the Renault power unit. They're going into 2026, taking the spot that Aston Martin have as they move to Honda from Mercedes as their power unit supplier. They're going to be a power unit supplied by Mercedes going into 2026. So there's already a lot of changeover. You're putting a lot of time and energy and resources just to adapting going into 2026 with these new engine regulations and then some. Leadership, they've had a lot of struggles and changes and shifts and movements. There's a lot happening behind the scenes at this team. The only constant in this team right now really looks like it's going to be Pierre Gasly and then Oliver Oakes as the team principal, who, remember, mind you, last year came in mid-season. There's a lot going on with this team. I think this is a very unfocused team from the outside looking in. They're all over the place. Pierre Gasly, again, Oliver Oakes are going to be more or less the consistency there. Gasly is a very good, strong lead driver. He's going to be the majority of where the points come from this year. But when you're looking at Jack Doohan, his entire situation, I kind of just feel bad for the guy. Because after signing last year and named as the next driver up, replacing Esteban Ocon, getting his debut one race early, and now walking into his rookie season, there have been a lot of reports of him only having technically a guaranteed 6 races this year because of the signing of very, very, very popular last year, Franco Colapinto, as the quote-unquote reserve driver to a multi...
Which is a driver that we both talked about to forever and ever. Like, we thought there was... Franco Colapinto was a name that nobody knew, drove a couple of races, and then everyone knew. Everybody knew Franco Colapinto's name in F1 by the time he was done with the 3 to 4 race span. Because it was like, dude, this guy's legit. Like, he doesn't put the car into the wall. He's getting points over and over again. Like, this guy's good. And I remember that we made the call. It was like, look, Colapinto needs to be a driver on a team this year. Mm-hmm. Ended up being Doohan. He ends up signing the reserve role. I don't call it a bold prediction, I think, because a lot, you already kind of alluded to
this, it isn't really, it's, I wouldn't say it's bold to predict that, you know, Franco Colapinto is going to be in that seat at some point this season.
It's going to be really tough. Jack Doohan's kind of in a situation where he's kind of got to get like points every week, and that's a really, really rough situation for him.
The expectations for Doohan has to be,
the seat on him is hot.
Yeah, it's incredibly hot, and he just got here. I feel bad for Jack Doohan, because watching the media around Formula One events, he's done plenty of interviews and spent plenty of time talking to members of the Formula One media, being very insightful. He seems like a good guy, and, you know, having this long journey to getting to Formula One for anybody is a dream. I feel bad for Jack Doohan, because he feels like he's kind of a sitting duck here, for better or worse. Yeah. And if you're Franco Colapinto, if you're Jack Doohan, excuse me, seeing Franco Colapinto coming in on this multi-year deal, Franco Colapinto wasn't coming over with the idea of, oh, I really want to be the Alpine reserve driver rather than the Williams reserve driver. No, he saw this as his best opportunity. Alpine looked at this as a great opportunity. Hey, at better or worse, we're going to have a really good driver lineup in about 6 to 7 races time if Jack isn't cutting it. So I feel there's a lot of pressure already for Jack. I think you have to be consistently within 1 to 2 places of Pierre Gasly every weekend to keep that seat simmering instead of blazing hot. But I would be shocked, unfortunately shocked in a sense, but excitedly shocked in another sense, if that Franco Colapinto is probably going to be taking that seat at some point this season. We're already walking into the season feeling like it's an inevitability, but with all that laid out, again, I don't think it's controversial at all to say that Alpine are going to just take a step back. There's just too much happening on the sidelines, not within the actual, you know, car.
Well, other than a crazy weekend where they just fell into the right place at the right time. Alpine had a bad year last year all the way around. All the way around. It looked really
up until
bad.
The very end, basically. Yeah.
They were a train wreck. They got a good weekend. They're going to continue to be a train wreck this year.
Yeah. So let's move on to fifth place. Aston Martin. The expectations for Aston Martin, I think you and I are probably going to feel pretty similarly here. I think they're going to be kind of meh. They finished in fifth place last season. They obviously have some really good infrastructure here. Lawrence Stroll has put a load of money into this team, but I don't see them taking any real big leaps forward. I don't think they're going to take any massive leaps backwards. I think they may tumble back down at worst to like seventh place, but this is just a team that's very comfortably right in the middle as far as development is considered and as far as, you know, infrastructure is considered. This is a solid team.
Yeah, they finished fifth last year. They could finish five or six, like you said, maybe seven again this year.
They were very comfortably in fifth too. They weren't close to Mercedes in fourth, and they were nowhere close to where Alpine finished in sixth either. They were just right there. They're mid.
94 points for them last year. Mercedes ahead of them with 468 and Alpine behind them with 65 points. So yeah, you know, definitely, like you said, literally right in the middle. I could see that exact same performance from Aston Martin this year. And I would expect, and I've seen some rumblings that this could be Fernando Alonso's last year in F1.
I think I might be a little shocked if that was the case. I mean, obviously he's got quite a bit of age, not to discount, you know, the rookie Fernando Alonso, you know, that's quite the meme, but I think he wants to drive a Newey car for at least 1 year. And that's a big highlight of this season. I think they're going to be very content with fifth place this year. I don't think they want to fall out of that spot. Don't get me wrong, but they're really looking forward to 2026 as well. Everybody is looking forward to 2026, but some teams a little bit more so than others. I think Aston Martin is one of those teams that falls into the more so. And with Adrian Newey joining the team, he's not even going to be a part of the team officially until March. He's going to be dead set focused on getting them as far ahead into 2026 as he possibly can. Yeah. Starting 3 months back, as far as the actual development is concerned for him, he's not going to be concerned in the slightest about 2025. He might have a couple of, hey, we did this at Red Bull. Maybe you guys want to try it on this car this year. You know, maybe it'll get you some more performance gains, but I don't see them making any massive leaps this year. This is a team that's very comfortable where they are. Although Lawrence Stroll would tell you otherwise, I just don't see them making any massive leaps. I'd be shocked. I'm ready to be proven wrong, but I just don't quite see it. Moving up to fourth place, Mercedes. Now we get to the big boys. This is where things get, in my opinion, very...
Is this really the big boys?
Yes! A team that's won this many championships recently.
I feel like top three is more where the big boys start.
Oh, okay. I'm just saying, this is a team that won races last year. So let's give them some credit.
I'm obviously kidding.
Yeah. Oh man, you know, I have no reason to be partial at all. I'm very excited. But before I wax on poetic, I'm gonna let you go first. I want to be fair. Go ahead.
So this is the team that really, they're not going to meet the expectations that are set on them. George is going to be too worried about his feud with Max to be driving well on the grid. Kimi is going to be terrible this year. He's not going to live up to any of the expectations that he has.
Very, very bold.
Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. Mercedes is going to be really good this year. George is once again going to be taking the role of driver one. And I understand that you're saying that, and I was waiting for you to cut me off. Lewis was not driver one last year. It was George. It was obvious that Mercedes kind of took that turn. I'm not saying that they gave him a different car. I'm not part of the Lewis Hamilton, George Russell, Mercedes conspiracy theorist on Reddit or anything, but it was obvious that they did start angling George as the driver one, and for a good reason. He is the one that's staying, and that is the driver of focus. And you bring in Kimi, which is a highly regarded, highly respected, and kind of the face of who could be the next wave of drivers as we talk about all these rookies. He's kind of he's the guy that everyone's talking about, and for a good reason. And I think Mercedes has a potential to put together a really good year. I don't know if they're constructors fight worthy. I think they're looking more towards 2026 when Kimi has a year under his belt. And maybe Georgia's not saying he's not in his prime now, but he's further on in his prime, maybe a little bit more developed, a little bit more educated, I guess, in the Mercedes system. Not that he isn't, but I think 2026 is a better year for you to start putting money on Mercedes to kind of start doing things. But I think this is going to be a really, really, really good year for Mercedes. I think they could finish in third in constructors. I could see both George. I could see George finishing top 10 in driver standings, points wise. And I'm interested to see what Kimi can do. And because Tristan, as he said, has waxed poetic about Kimi Antonelli since probably this time last year. And it's been the move that was on the way. It finally happened. And I, for one, am excited to see what he can do.
Yeah. Now it's finally my turn. The resident Mercedes fan. Look, I think this is the team that's going to win a few races. I don't think they're going to be earth shattering. I think third to fourth place is about pretty comfortable as we walk into this upcoming season. As far as George Russell's concerned, this is officially the first year he's the real, like, full-on team leader. I mean, you can speculate about last year, about which direction they really were trying to go. Obviously, you're going to plan more towards the future than you are towards the present. But overall, this is his first year without Lewis Hamilton. This is his team this year for sure, as Kimi Antonelli comes along. I think if the car is superb, I think he's going to have an opportunity to maybe be in that world title hunt, but I don't by any stretch of the imagination believe that he's going to win the world championship this year. Mercedes have obviously struggled a lot within this regulation. They've gone anywhere from second place down to fourth place, but haven't obviously won any constructors' titles nor drivers' titles within this newest regulation. A few wins here and there. Last year, they made quite a lot of progress, but at the end of the day, we really have to see what the car looks like in Australia after that first qualifying session to really get an understanding of where this car is, maybe even over the first few races. But for him, I think it's a big season to be the face. I think it's a big season to really be comfortable. And if he has a really strong showing, I think you could look at this as a potential contract extension season. I think he's got this year and the 2026 first year of the new regulation set. But if they really love what they get out of George and they gauge the market and they consider their options, I wouldn't be shocked at all if he has a strong season, maybe finishing fifth place or even a little bit higher, that they decide to just go ahead and extend him. As far as Kimi Antonelli is concerned, I think the expectations are really very simple. Just take it all in, learn, get as much exposure, get comfortable. This is your home. This is what, you know, we have high hopes for the future, but Toto Wolff has been very, very straightforward with this in the media. I imagine he's very straightforward with this directly to Kimi Antonelli as well. This is a learning year. There are going to be struggles. He's 18 years old. He's the youngest driver on the grid. I think he's going to get stronger throughout the season. Watching F2 last season, that's exactly what happened over the course of the year. Had a couple of wins himself alongside Ollie Bearman. Beat Ollie Bearman over the course of the full season as well from a points perspective. I'd be pleasantly surprised if Kimi Antonelli lands on a podium this year. That's about where I'm at.
I do like the addition of the Adidas this year for Mercedes. I will say that.
Oh, it looks pretty clean. Yeah, I'm looking forward.
It's not to on that one. It's not on that one.
No. I know. I'm seeing it. But like, no, the striping, it looks good. It looks good. Moving over to Red Bull, who finished in third place last season. I think I'll start here. Expectations this year. I think Max is, of course, going to continue to fight for wins. They're going to execute pit stops. They're going to do all the fundamental things correctly. I think that Red Bull are probably going to be within this third to fourth place fight. Towards the back half of the season, it seemed like they hit a development ceiling. They crushed things, obviously, very early on within this regulation set. But overall, I wouldn't be too shocked. Max wins 4 to 5 races this year, continues to be in that World Drivers' Championship fight. But overall, the onus is going to be very heavily on the other side of the garage from an expectation standpoint. Be close to Max, pick up as many points as possible, keep us in the constructors' fight. Outperform the man you replaced in Checo Perez. That's Liam Lawson's job this year.
Which, you know, isn't going to be too hard. It's just pretty much, hey, get the car across the line at the end of the race, and you'll be doing better than Checo would.
I mean, staying in the points, being consistently in Q3s, I think that's the job you need to make. If you land on a podium this year, if you're Liam Lawson, I would be happy. I think that's what you can ask for. A couple of a podium appearances in this car, I think, is a fair barometer for success.
I'm not falling for the Red Bull death trap again. I said all year last year that they were going to fall off. They were going to fall off. They were going to fall off. And they did. And they definitely did. But with the help of Sergio Perez, not really with the help of the team. The team did not have miscues. The team did not do anything to make them fall off. What?
Well, while Kevin's being a little bit being interrupted there, obviously we're recording these from home. Sometimes things like this are going to happen. It's just part
anyway,
of life,
like I was saying,
continue with your point,
before,
please.
Before I was rudely interrupted. No, I think that this year is going to be another good year for Red Bull. They're going to do a lot of the things that you expect, kind of like you already talked about. But I'm excited to see what Liam can do. I know I keep saying that about these different drivers, but we really don't know what to expect from Liam. He's kind of a little bit of an oddball, I guess I would say. He's kind of a burst of energy kind of guy, and we know that that's not really a guy that Max likes to be around. So I'm intrigued by this driver pairing. I'm excited.
I don't think that's entirely true.
I'm excited.
He and Danny Ricciardo were really good friends during their time.
Yeah, because they didn't drive together. Oh, well, you know.
No, they did.
Anyway,
yeah.
Towards the end. Anyway.
I'm sure. I think it'll be fine.
Nevertheless, I'm intrigued by this driver pairing. I'm excited for what Liam Lawson can do. Now, can we get to the team that really matters, please? Come on.
You're right. Ferrari. We got to talk about Ferrari. You really set yourself up for that one. The most exciting driver lineup on this grid. Lewis Hamilton, the 7-time world champion, driving in Ferrari red for the first time in his career, alongside Charles Leclerc, one of the fastest drivers on this grid, who had a very strong year as well last season. No indications that this team is slowing down at all. I've heard a lot about a major overhaul of the car going into this season, reports that they had done a lot of work. They're expecting there to be quite a bit of gains, of course. So, I mean, the expectations this year, more or less, you got to be fighting within the constructors' fight. That's just every year you're trying to fight for titles if you're a part of Ferrari. Overall, this is looking like a very big learning year for Lewis Hamilton. It will be a big adjustment for him, for sure. But obviously, a couple of pieces within this team coming over from Mercedes alongside team chief Frederic Vasseur. He obviously had a lot of experience with Lewis in his younger days. So there's a bit of comfortability there. Don't get me wrong. But overall, I think Ferrari are going to be in the mix for both of the titles this year when it comes to Drivers' Championship, Constructors' Championship, and whatnot. This is going to be the story all year, is Lewis Hamilton and Ferrari. It just will be. It's undeniable.
Yeah, I mean, there's no arguing that. It's the biggest driver lineup since, I mean, I haven't been keeping
maybe,
up with that one that long, but probably a long, long time. Probably a couple
maybe,
of days.
Maybe Senna and Prost, probably. I mean, it's massive.
It's been a long, long time, and it's in the Ferrari red. There's reasons to be excited. The HP logo in the middle of their chest is not one of them, but there's many, many reasons for Ferrari fans and F1 fans in general to be excited about this lineup.
Well, there goes the HP sponsorship, but cool.
I'm a MacBook guy anyway, so whatever. But, you know, I will say Ferrari is part of my bold takes, and we'll get to that later.
Yep. So now we get to move on to the Constructors' Champions, the reigning Constructors' Champions. Your team, the Papaya team, McLaren. And I'll start this segment the same way that you started the Mercedes segment. I think this team has a lot of potential for success and disaster this season. They dethroned Red Bull to win their 9th Constructors' Championship ever in team history. But McLaren now find themselves in the crosshairs. It's one thing to be the hunter. It's another thing to be the hunted here. They're in uncharted territory as defending champions at this stage of the McLaren development. And Lando versus Oscar, I'm incredibly excited to see this start from zero with this potential championship level car, a car that can fight for wins on any given weekend. When you're starting from zero, we talked a lot about this last year. Lando had the edge early, carried that into the success late. Obviously, both these guys got their wins at some point last season, their first wins ever, but both of these guys won multiple races last year. I'm incredibly excited to see the battle between both of these drivers in the team, outside of the team. Maybe it affects the team negatively from top down, uncharted territory. I'm excited. I think this team's going to start hot early. Don't get me wrong, but man, this is going to be an incredible 2025 season.
Well, I mean, I didn't realize you were going to be the number one McLaren hater. I didn't.
It's not hate. It's not hate. I got to contextualize it for the people.
I've got to buff back. Why do you think there's going to be a disaster for one of the cleanest teams that was last year?
I said could be disaster.
And why do you say that?
Because when you're starting from zero, at the end of the day, only one person could be a World Drivers Champion. If both of these guys are close, fighting for a championship all season, think about it. One of these guys is going to make a call that goes against team orders. You went with team orders last year when, okay, we got Oscar's first win. Right. We went with team orders to start getting Lando some points towards the end of the season when it was a bit out of reach for the drivers. Right. The stakes are a little bit less. But when you're starting with a clean slate, both of these drivers, I would argue they're similar talent level. I think you could argue Lando's a bit faster over one pure lap. But Oscar, I love his racecraft. At times last year, I said that I think Oscar could very well be the number one driver within this team. Both of these guys, in my opinion, are pretty even overall. When the chips are down and you've got to make a decision for yourself, for your legacy, for what your goals are as a driver, how often, how improbable, how tiny of a chance is it that you're even ever in a position to be fighting for a championship at all? At the end of the day, it's your legacy or his. You're going to have to make a decision.
McLaren has already came out and pretty much said, look, it's clean slate. Whoever wants the driver's championship, it's theirs to take. There is no... I guess they're still going to call it papaya rules, but it's not really like, you know, look, I would say McLaren is more focused on getting a driver championship this year than a constructors championship. I don't know if that's a bold take. I don't know what kind of take that is, but that is what I think. I think they're more focused on one of their drivers winning a driver's championship. And I've already said this last year, but this could be one of the last couple of years when you have both Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri on the same team, which a lot of people would consider two number one drivers on the same team. Now, you could look at Charles and Lewis and you could say the same thing, but Lewis is at the tail end of his career and he understands that Charles is that guy. These are both young guys. Obviously, Oscar's younger, but these are both young guys who are still a little unproven. And they're both, like you said, fighting for that win, fighting for that championship, fighting for legacy. Not a lot of two drivers on the grid can say the same thing that are on the same team. So there is a lot of situations that could pop up for McLaren where, you know, what decisions are going to be made? Because if you're not focusing on one driver, or at least you're not saying you are, does that hold up to be true? Or is it still Lando's team? Or is it Oscar's team? I'm intrigued by that. I could understand that argument, but I don't necessarily agree with your point about them having the target on their back. And let me tell you why. I understand they're constructors, defending champions. Everyone's got their eye on Ferrari and what Ferrari's going to do. And I think that kind of creates a bit of a smoke screen for McLaren to kind of stay as the unproven team. Look, we still don't know if Lando's going to, you know, if he gets pole, we don't know if he's going to take, if he's still going to have the lead after the first lap. That's still a problem, right? We don't know what kind of flexibility Oscar is going to be given. So there's a lot of questions surrounding this McLaren team. But like you said, a lot of excitement as well, a lot of intrigue to see what they're going to put on the grid. And while I wouldn't say that there's room for disaster necessarily, I would definitely say there's room for letdown. And that's... There's like a high ceiling, but also a low floor when it comes to McLaren. And as a McLaren fan, it's a little scary. But I hope you all enjoyed it. That was our expectations of the grid. We are kind of getting a little long in this, so we're
going to... It's okay. It's been an entire offseason. We've had so much to talk about.
It's been a long time. We've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, we've had so much to talk about, and you have to really characterize each and every one of these teams. You have to do them a justice, and I think it's only fair to do that for every one of these teams. I think we've given all these teams a proper amount of time, maybe even and then some. So we've made our intentions and our expectations incredibly clear. We have to move on now, though. We have to talk about these liveries we saw at F175, and I think it's time to rank them. We got to talk about who won, who lost, because at the end of the day, there are winners and losers when it comes to everything in this sport. We got to rank these liveries, and Kevin Walker has obviously just pulled this up on our screen. Thank you so much for putting this all together. Found a nice little tier list on Tier Maker. That's where everything really is these days. But we've got some strong opinions about some of these liveries, and who else better to start off this entire process with than V-Carp? We got to talk about V-Carp, right? I know you also have it pulled up on your other screen there. We get a chance to look at the car a little bit more detailed. Here we go. Yeah, there it is. There it is. Man, we got to, I hate to start off with the best. I really do, because this livery absolutely rocks. I love the V-Carp livery. I think from a graphic design standpoint, as a amateur graphic designer, so to speak, mm-hmm. You know, I threw these backgrounds together. You know, little claps in the chat, little claps in the chat for I'll backpat a little bit. You know, I worked hard. I put these backgrounds together for us. I think it looks great. I love the little addition of the bulls at the very end, kind of like, you know, gradient off. The white isn't like super shiny white. It's a nice like matte white almost. It just looks good from top to bottom. It doesn't over flare at any spots. To me, this is a 10 out of 10 livery. People are going to talk about this one for a while.
Yeah, I love this livery, like you already pointed out, because you talk forever. The bulls coming out at the end kind of fading into the blue. I really enjoyed that about it. I really like how the Red Bull is just kind of big and it's just right there. This is really great for sponsors. The Visa sponsorship looks incredible in the blue, obviously. That's something that you've got to think about whenever doing these liveries on a Ferrari. And I think that this really does really good for all the sponsors. Everything pops out. The green and the Cash App pops, the red for the Honda, the Hugo. Everything looks really good. All things were taken into account.
Yeah, it works well with the color scheme. Beautiful. Yeah, the only thing that goes off color is the Cash App logo, but I don't even hate it. It's just a nice little, it's just a little touch. You know what I mean? It's so, not enough to be a glaring. We got to put this masterpiece. This is top.
This one is going into masterpiece, and I know y'all can see it. We got masterpiece, sleek and stylish, decent, but could be better and miss the mark. Now, Tristan, what are you thinking about doing next?
We went with such a high point to start. If we're going to move in a different direction here, I think let's check out Sauber. Let's go with Sauber next.
Let's go to Sauber.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Sauber, this one's an interesting car because obviously they're a green brand. They're a green car. I said all year last year that it really sucks that they suck because I love the color green. And I really wish that I could root for them. I do like this this livery. I think it looks really good. It's not that crazy. It's nothing too different from what they did last year. It kind of looks like they, and I'm stealing this from a meme that I saw, but it kind of looks like they used too much Everglow on their car. But
oh, you mean the Flovis or whatever? Yeah.
The Flovis, whatever you want to call it. I think it looks good. Again, you got to think about your sponsorships. It makes the sponsorships look great. Good, not great car. I like it, not in love with it. That's my takes from the car
for the Sauber team. Look, I think you kind of nailed it here, but overall, I like it. I don't love this. I actually like it a lot more than last year's. I was not a fan of last year's livery.
I do like this year's more.
I like what they've done with the front wheels versus the back wheels when it came to being consistent with the colors. So you've got these nice wheel green and black wheel covers on the back, just the black ones on the back. The stake is very prominent on all corners of this car, really. But overall, it looks good. I don't hate it. I don't love it. If I had to rank it 1 to 10, it's still near the bottom for me just in comparison to the rest of them. So looking at the tier list maker, I would say it's decent, but it could be better.
That's what I'm thinking. Next up, let's get to it. Everyone's talking about it. It's the team that is catching all the flack.
Let's Ferrari.
Ferrari red.
This was so the Sauber was really just a buffer. I'm not going to lie to you guys. We had to buffer this because I couldn't go high and then go low. It would just because everything else would have been so underwhelming. I'm going to take the floor here. I know you haven't even given it to me, but I'm going to take the floor here. I absolutely hate this livery. I hate this livery with a passion, and I hate it for one reason. It's just because of the HP logo being so dominant on an otherwise perfectly fine car. It's Ferrari. It's a darker shade of red than Ferrari has had in the past. Trying a little bit of something different. I don't even hate that it's a darker color. I hate that there's just this big sheet of white paper all over the wing, all over the side of the car, on the front wing of the car. That is obstructed additionally with the blue HP logo. If they could have just meshed the HP logo with red, I think it would have looked better. They could have changed the stripe and made it like yellow and made the logo white. There are so many different avenues they could have gone with this logo. And I think it just misses the mark. For me, this one, it's just not good. I don't like it. 1 out of 10 for me, just because it's so unfortunate you have one thing that just takes away from the entire experience. And this is the first car that Lewis Hamilton's going to have to drive in with Ferrari. And I feel a little bit underwhelmed for somebody so stylish to be driving such a unfortunate livery. There you go. There's your clip.
I was trying to find a picture of an alternate where we've seen this Ferrari car, but with the red HP logo, and it looks so much better. Like
such a simple thing. Such a simple change made it so much better, but they decided to go with
how many millions are you going to lose if you go to HP? Like, look, I know y'all's thing is blue and white, but what if we did it red? And HP is like, well, we're not going to give you as much money. And then Ferrari's like, okay, but it would make our car look better.
I think Enzo Ferrari wouldn't have approved this. Because at the end of the day, Ferrari is the brand. Ferrari, this is your car. But now it's the HP Ferrari Formula One car. Everything HP is everywhere. You go on the website. I mean, we were looking at all of the teams earlier. The HP logo, it's Ferrari / HP. They are one and the same as far as the sponsorship is concerned.
It's upsetting. It's upsetting. And I think the thing that upsets me the most about this car, and we're not going to spend too much time on it because it's the main thing is the main thing. It's right there, big bold in the middle of the screen. Yeah.
Let's drop it on the tier list.
I do, but I want to say this before we do finish. I love this dark red. They said they were going to do dark red. There was rumor of them doing the dark red. They fulfilled it. I love this dark red of the Ferrari color. But they had to let us down with the last part.
Yeah. So I think this one misses the mark, man. I'm sorry. It might be the only one that really misses the mark for me, too. It's unfortunate. We can move on to the next one, though. We got to move on to Haas. And we got to take a look at that Haas.
Okay. All right. Give me a second. Gotta find it. We're still navigating.
I'm putting him under the gun here. I'm sorry. There we go. Yeah.
Oh, what a shot for this Haas too, man.
Yeah, from the F1's
25. I'm gonna take the floor now. I love this Haas. It doesn't do anything crazy. It doesn't do anything bold necessarily, but it does follow the V carb flow a little bit with a mainly white car. And I like this. It plays. You want to talk about playing to your sponsorship colors? I mean, you could not have done a better job of doing that. This is the MoneyGram Haas. MoneyGram is a red, white, and blue. A red, white, and black brand. Haas is something they've always kind of stayed with the red and the white. Now you bring in a hint of the black, make the white pop a little bit more. It's nothing crazy, but I like it. It's different. It's kind of like an inverse of what they did last year, stealing Tristan's words. But I think it looks really good. I think this is a flashy car. It's going to pop on the track. I really do like this livery for Haas.
Yeah, I mean, you really laid it all out there. It looks good. It's a bit of a mirror from last year in some areas. The white, black, and red. I think it's kind of hard to mess up black, white, and red, you know, just generally speaking. I mean, you can put that color scheme together on almost any kind of logo and it'll still look okay. You put it together on this car, it looks perfectly fine. I would say for me, it's not my favorite just because at a certain level for me, it does feel a bit routine. But I like what they've done with the logo on the side pod for sure. I think that's what really sells me for this car.
I really do like that. I wish, let me try to see if I can find a better picture of that. Cause I really do like
the,
that.
The white background with the black Haas on the side looks really good. And it just all works really, really well. The color complements have all been very, very strong. I like this one a lot. If I had to rank it from a 1 to 10, which I did separately, I think I had Haas around 6. They're around the middle for me. It's just because there's a bit of a limitation when it comes to simple colors like black, white, red. There's only but really so much you can do with them to make them stand out and look a little bit different. But
so there's that on the side pod and that Haas logo on the side as well. Yeah,
because there aren't really many wrong answers. The 10th anniversary Haas car, by the way, this is the 10th car for the team. There aren't a lot of wrong answers here, and they're all correct. But it doesn't necessarily mean they stand out amazingly. So for me, I would say top of decent, but could be better. Sleek and stylish maybe towards the bottom.
I like sleek and stylish towards the bottom personally.
Yeah.
Because I think it's better than decent personally. Yeah. Now this car is your beloved Mercedes.
Yeah.
So let me go and find that so that way you can talk about how it's the best car on the grid, even though it's not.
You're putting words in my mouth that I haven't put in there yet.
It's not a great picture. Let me find a better one.
While you're looking for that, I will comment on it regardless. It's very similar to last year. There are some changes. The Ineos sponsorship that's usually on the top of the car, on the overhead air intake. It's no longer red. They decided to block that out with silver. Some people were a bit critical about whether or not they could see the red star for Niki Lauda. It is there towards the top of the car near the top of the halo, if I'm not mistaken. But overall, it looks good. They didn't change a ton from last year. In fact, I think they just made the silver a bit more prominent. The star structure on the back end of the car still looks pretty similar as well. I didn't dislike last year's livery. I think they've made some tweaks this year that to me look really, really good. It's not a bad livery by any stretch of the imagination. I like the way they've used the Petronas blue alongside for the striping as well, kind of stretching it a little bit further out onto the side pod without over making it too overly prominent. And all in all, I think it's a solid livery. It's not my favorite one from this year on the grid, but it's certainly not my least favorite. I actually do like it more than the Haas. I like it more than a majority. Call me partial, but it's good. I would put it in sleek and stylish myself.
Really? Okay. I think it's decent, but could be better personally.
Okay. How so? Give me your notes.
Well, because I just feel like it's kind of a rinse and repeat of last year, and they took away the red on the top of the car, which is something that I personally really liked about the Mercedes. But we'll put it in sleek and stylish. That's fine.
I like it more than the Haas. Like if we're going to like really properly rank.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I like the Haas more personally.
Well, I mean, if we're talking about repetition, I mean, what's the next step here? If we wanted to start getting critical about.
I'm going to be critical of my team all day long. Don't even
go ahead. Go ahead. You have the floor here.
Have I ever been known to be a homer? Obviously. So you wouldn't know this, but this is actually the 2025 car livery for McLaren. You could say, well, Kevin, it doesn't that look like 2024? And I would say, yes, TLP, you are correct. That does look like 2024. But why do you have to change if it's going to win, right? We're more focused on what's going on internally than we care about what's going on outside. We've got so many damn sponsors. It doesn't matter even what the car looks like, what color it is. It's going to be covered up in sponsors, right? Good, decent, gets the job done. It's papaya. It's black. You add a streak of blue. Yay. I'm more excited for
Control C, Control V. You know, that's all I really got to say. I've said as much on Twitter. I've said as much on Blue Sky. It's the same thing.
I'm more excited for the one-off liveries that we're going to get this year from McLaren, to be honest, because you know they like to do that.
Let's go ahead and drop this thing in the tier sheet.
Yeah, so this one's going to be decent, but could be better.
I think you're actually a little bit harder on this than myself. I like it more than the Sauber for sure. I would put it in sleek and stylish personally, but we could do decent, top of decent. I would say top of decent, maybe. Because it's just there's just no changes. I mean, you know, like there are some changes on the Mercedes you can notice. There are no changes on the McLaren. Moving on to Aston Martin. I mean, that's another car that really hasn't changed much either. It's green. Why mess up something that works, right?
Ferrari. I'm not even going to pull up the picture because the F1 themselves knew that the Aston Martin was the exact same car because, well, this is the picture that they gave us. It's like, hey, here's the livery. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, it's basically the same, except the number is now like a highlighter yellow, and that's kind of it. I would say it's decent. I don't hate it.
Better or worse than the Kick Sauber?
I like Aston Martin classically. I would say they're better than...
I think the Kick Sauber looks better.
You think it looks better?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're kind of splitting hairs at this point. We've gone an hour 20. I'm not going to spend 10 minutes arguing with you about whether or not it should be ranked higher than the Sauber. Because we have other things to talk about still.
Let's see what we got here. Livery that I actually do have some positive things to say, which is rare because I never have anything positive to say about Alpine. I like this a whole lot. Now, where they missed the mark is this BWT that they did right here. I love it, but they did not do it on the front wing, and that's frustrating. Yep. What you did is you took blue and pink, which is a pretty hard color combo, and you made it work over the years. You brought in more blue this year. Your sponsorships are popping. I love this for Alpine. It looks really good, but it could have been a little bit better, and I'll try to find a picture of that front wing for Alpine. I like it. It just could have been a tiny bit better.
That's my only caveat as well. I look at this and they just kept the same wing as last year when they could have nailed that front profile. The side profile, which is the majority of when we're actually going to see this car admittedly on track, it's gorgeous. I love the way it looks. I love the side profile. I think that the blue is beautiful. The pink is nice. Like it all works. It looks gorgeous for a team that is dealing with so much turmoil that I've laid out with today. They certainly know how to design and put together a livery. I would say this one gets like an 8.5 out of 10. It's mostly just, there you go. Perfect.
You
get a great look at the side versus the front, and Motorsport wants you to sign up. No, it's just it. The front and the back wing take away a little bit, but overall it looks gorgeous. I like this one a lot. I'd put it right under the V car for Masterpiece.
Really? Okay, so you do like it in Masterpiece. I would agree with that. I do like that for Masterpiece. Yep. Now, this one is going to be
the Williams,
and this one is...
Shocker, guys. It's blue. It's blue.
And it's got a Duracell battery on it.
Woo. Very cool. Very cool. I like it. It's inoffensive. You know, they didn't do anything crazy with it, which is fine. You don't need to do anything crazy with something as simple as Williams. It's sleek, stylish, but it's very limited. I would say it's decent. Could be better. I actually like it more than the Sauber, but maybe it's because I'm a bit picky. I like it.
And then you want to talk about control and pace.
Control V. Yeah.
I mean,
Red Bull.
We're always talking about with Red Bull, dog.
Yeah, you could Google the car for the last 3 years, and it would look the exact same. The sponsors change, but that's about it. I don't think we need to bother at this point.
It's always going to be the same.
We do have to talk about our bold predictions, kind of readdressing them. We addressed them at the end of the season last year, let's get a better cam. There we go. We addressed these bold predictions at the end of the last episode of last season, and I wanted to readdress them one more time before we walk into this year so we can be proven so dramatically wrong that it'll be very funny to look at as we review the season as we continue on. I wanted to talk about the constructors. I wanted to predict the Drivers' Championship. I wanted to predict if there were going to be any rookies who win a race this year. And Kevin also has a special fun subsect or a separate question. So we'll hang on to that one. Kevin Walker, your prediction for the Constructors Champion of the 2025 season.
My prediction for the Constructors Championship will be McLaren. I think McLaren are going to do a good job of stacking together points. Though I am a little concerned with how Lando and Oscar will fight on the track, not off the track. I think they have a good relationship. I'm a little concerned about that, but I don't think they're going to be crashing into each other. I don't think it's going to rise to that tension necessarily. Maybe I'm naive. I don't know. But I got McLaren winning the Constructors back-to-back.
And I love to break hearts. It's my favorite. I got Ferrari. I actually do think Ferrari are going to bring out a banger of a car this year. They looked at the prospects of what McLaren have been doing. They've been incredibly, incredibly strong when it comes to innovation. But I think there's going to be a bit of a cannibalization within McLaren. I really do. Both of these drivers have the opportunity to win a championship. Their biggest opponent arguably could be right next to them. I think within that, you have the loss of points for the team perspective. Ferrari's lineup is just savvy. It's nasty. Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc, they're both going to be within that mix, in my opinion, as well. I think Ferrari take advantage over the course of a full season with a bit more of that experience factor, especially with the addition of Lewis Hamilton being there. I think they're going to be a little bit more locked in. But it's a team sport. Obviously, there's a lot of things that could go wrong for Ferrari as well. But I think Ferrari, at the end of it all, it's going to be very close, but they're going to reclaim a Constructors.
All right, moving on to our driver championship winner. Speaking of Ferrari, I've got Charles Leclerc.
You've got Charles Leclerc. So you've got an offset championship 2 years in a row.
I do. Interesting. I think Charles is going to be – I think he's going to do a really good job. I think he's going to flourish in this Ferrari system. I've already kind of talked about it, but I think it's going to take a little bit for Lewis to get acclimated for the Scuderia. But I think Charles is going to do an incredible job. Another year in the Ferrari, another year in the Ferrari red. He's kind of used to it now. He's kind of knocking on that door of a top five. Well, he is a top five driver. I don't want to say that as if he's not, but he's really, really establishing himself. And we really saw it turn on last year where Charles kind of just went on that stretch of just back-to-back-to-back to really good weekends. And I was like, yo, Ferrari's going to pass a falling Red Bull, and they're going to put up a fight with McLaren. And Charles Leclerc was at the head of that battle. I really think Charles is going to have a good shot of winning the Drivers' Championship this year.
And funny enough, I'm staying with Ferrari, but I'm going to go with Lewis Hamilton. I'm going to stay with my bold prediction from last year. I think that he will probably acclimate a little bit quicker than people might expect. I don't think it's going to take a full year for Lewis Hamilton to remember that he's one of the best drivers of all time. And I don't want to try to overgrandize the ability here, but an energized and enthusiastic Lewis Hamilton, it's somebody who is somebody you really have to be scared of if you're the rest of the grid. If this car is as good as I think you and I were both expecting it to be, if Lewis feels like he can actually fight for wins, he's not a guy that makes a lot of mistakes. All that experience, yep, all that savviness, all that racecraft, I think is going to come into play. When he's locked in, when he's dialed up, Lewis Hamilton is the best driver on the grid, in my personal opinion. If this car is as strong as, again, we both think it's going to be, over the course of an entire season, I've got Lewis Hamilton winning his 8th Drivers' Championship. A hell of a story to end this regulation set and to begin his Ferrari tenure. I mean, it's going to sell out grandstands and then some. The merchandise is going to be incredible. But we won't be able to. Yeah, no, there's no way. Any rookies that are going to win this year, and really it's between Liam Lawson and Kimi Antonelli. Do we see either of these guys winning? And if so, who wins?
I've got two, and I think Liam and I think Kimi could both get a win this year. I think I've got two rookie wins this year.
You got both of them winning a race at some point this year?
Yes.
Wow. I think if I had to pick any rookies, it would be Kimi. This is more to do with Max than it does Kimi, funny enough. I think Kimi is a fantastic driver, of course. I've talked about it at length, but I think within the Red Bull system, Max being who Max is, if the car is dialed in enough, I don't think he'll just let Liam get a win. I would be surprised. So if there's an opportunity for Red Bull to go out and win a weekend, Max is disgusting. He's one of the greatest drivers of all time. If it's going to happen, it will be Max at the top step. I think Liam is in line to get some podiums this year, but Max is going to make him work for it, for sure. You had an extra question, though. Go ahead.
I want to save it for... Okay, no, we can go do it now.
No, man, I dialed it up. Let's hear it.
All right, so I want to know... I already know what my answer is going to be, and I have a feeling we could hit the same answer, but we'll see what happens. I want to know who your DNF superstar is going to be. Who's going to be the guy that just leads the charge in DNFs?
DNF champion this year. That is a fantastic question. Let me look into the driver grid here. If I had to pick one driver to crash the most this year, man, that's so tough. The problem is, like, you could say Jack Doohan. Right. And that wouldn't necessarily be a wrong answer.
But he'd only get six
races. But he'd only get six opportunities to do it. Over the course of an entire season, the entire grid, I actually think it'll be Isaac Hadjar.
Okay. All right. I had a feeling you were going to say him. I did.
That's my shot in the dark. I mean, there's so many. There's going to be potentially 21 drivers this year if Kyle Pinto ends up on the grid. I would say Isaac Hadjar because I don't think he's going to go anywhere. He's incredibly quick. But he's going to be pushing the car a little bit more so. If you put me under the gun here, I'm putting Isaac Hadjar down.
Unfortunately, the guy that I'm picking is not a rookie. I don't know if he was the runner up last year because our former champion, Checo Perez, has left us. He's on to bigger, better things.
Maybe he'll come back in the Cadillac. Who knows?
Our DNF champion will not be here this year, but I think you could see Lance Stroll taking over the DNF championship this year.
He's going to put up a lot of pressure on his dad to make some decisions.
He's be driving that car like it's his daddy's car. And that is definitely the case. And then we'll hit bold predictions. And we know we've kept y'all super long. If you stay tuned into this point, thank you so much.
Yeah, if you've stuck around this long, honestly, you got to subscribe. I mean, give us some follows, all that stuff.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. Yeah. It's only going to get better from here. We're going to hit our bold prediction, and then we're going to talk about this P10 game and our final thoughts going into practice. And then I promise we'll let y'all go. You won't have to hear or see our faces for a little bit. Then we'll actually have some F1 stuff to talk about after we see some on-track stuff, but we'll hit some bold predictions. And I've got a bold prediction that I've been cooking up.
Okay, you got another one.
Yeah, I've got a big one.
Let's hear it.
You're going to hate it. And talk about a heartbreaker and talk about a hater. My bold prediction, and you can bookmark it, you can tweet it, you can do whatever you want to do. February 23rd, 2025 is when we're recording this. Lewis will not thrive in his first year at Ferrari.
Okay.
And to the point, I've got under 3 race wins and under 10 podiums.
Under 3 Lewis race wins. Hamilton. I mean, those are both solid lines. I think 3 wins in a season is still hard, no matter where you're driving at. Like, obviously last year, I think there were only 6 wins between both the McLarens, if I'm not mistaken. So like getting 3 wins at all is really tough. I would say 3 wins is a fair number for Lewis. I did predict him to win the championship this year, but if it's not going to be a championship season, 3 wins is fair. Under 3 wins, man, that's a lot. You think he's just going to struggle overall, not even hit the podium? I think 10 podiums is a lot as well, by the way. Like if you said 6 podiums, he wouldn't hit 6, I'd be shocked. But 10 podiums is pretty tough. It's 24 race season. I would say It's not unfathomable, but it would be shocking for him to not have a good season just because Lewis is Lewis. So nice, bold prediction. I appreciate it. All right. We're almost done here. P10 game. This is something we're going to be doing. Last year we talked about, hero of the weekend, all that stuff. But I did want to bring the TLPs into this game. I've played it with my friends. I've played this going back for a couple of years now. And I really want to share this with you guys. Google Doc, whatever you need.
Here, go ahead. Give this the full view because this one's kind of hard to see.
Okay, yeah. So the P10 game, and you guys feel free to play along with us as we go throughout this entire season. It's a little bit simple, straightforward. It's kind of a bell curve when it comes to points. So if you were to land, and let's say you're making your prediction, who I think is going to be in 10th place this weekend, you get 25 points. If they end up in 11th, 18 points, and it works its way down into 1 point at either end of the spectrum. You make that prediction, you get your points or whatever for that weekend. Let's say I get it correct, nail my 25, and it shows up purple. You also get a race winner bonus. So we're going to also be predicting race winners this week, every single weekend. You get an extra 5 points for that race win. Let's go back. You get an extra 5 points per race win prediction that is correct. And a retirement bonus, the first driver to crash on any given weekend, or no drivers, if that's your prediction. So no DNFs for an entire race weekend. For the entire race, the actual primary race, not sprints or qualifying or otherwise. But yeah, that's what we're going to play this year. So we're going to go for our P10 finish, who's going to crash, and who our race win is going to be every single week of this season. You'll get those every prediction Thursday. I'm incredibly excited for this. Kevin hasn't played this before, but it'll be a fun little way to see just how good / bad we are at predicting things over the entire course of the season.
I'm super stoked for it, super excited for it. Like you said, I still have to have you break down the rules because I'm kind of saying an idiot is kind of harsh, but it is a lot of like numbers and things to understand, but we'll break it down. And TLPs, we'd love for y'all to tag along, play along with us.
We're going to be keeping track of this every single week, so you guys can play along with yourselves at home. Tell us how silly we are on social media or otherwise, or down in the comment sections below every single week and when we're dropping these things. So there's a lot to look forward to this upcoming season. We've ironed this one out. We've got fun things to keep track of all year. This has been the longest episode of the Lap Podcast history so far. This may end up being the longest one we ever do. We've just had so much to talk about. We've been incredibly excited to get back and talking to you guys. So long wait is over. Thank you guys so much for tuning into this first episode of the season. You can expect our next episode to drop on March 13th ahead of the Australian Grand Prix. Follow us on all the socials. They've been on the ticker on the bottom this entire time. If you haven't followed us, you haven't subscribed, what are you doing? Make sure to subscribe, follow, drop a comment, say hello. Give us all the love and support we can handle. Thank you guys so much for watching this episode. You didn't have anything to say there, Kevin? Okay. Well, that's Kevin Walker. I'm Tristan Ryan. I'm Tristan Ryan. Well, a little blooper for you guys at the end. I'm Tristan Ryan. That's Kevin Walker. We're going to catch you guys March 13th. See you.